This is one of the most foundational wealth-building lessons that you could possibly learn.
You didn't inherit billions to start, but that doesn't mean you can't start something productive now that's going to benefit your children's children moving forward.
Don't spend your own money. Stop. The worst thing you could possibly do is that money that you work, you sweat, you bleed for, that you sacrifice fun and nights and weekends for, don't spend it. You got to put that somewhere and create permanent wealth with it, and then either spend the money it makes, spend the money your money makes, or borrow against your own money.
Well, simple question. Would you rather have a dollar doing one thing at a time for you, or would you rather have it doing multiple things? Most people's problems are they don't have any cash, right? Solution, infinite banking concept. Rethink your thinking.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. Well, man, well, let's get going. Last week, we told everybody, if you hung around to the end of the episode, we're going to talk about the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts. So maybe a little bit of history to start with about each of those families. So in 1877, Cornelius Vanderbilt died as the richest man in America. He was worth $105 million at that time. Today's dollar is about $2.3 billion. So just 48 years later, less than half a century, at a Vanderbilt family reunion, it's reported that not a single millionaire remained in that entire family. So what did the Rockefellers know that the Vanderbilts didn't? Well, the difference wasn't how they made money. It's how they kept it. You know, they both made money and by being business owners, by being entrepreneurs, taking risks, but only one of them kept it.
Yeah. So Dave, the Vanderbilts, they didn't lose their fortune right away. They kind of lost it over generations, right? They didn't create a system that respected capital, respected, you know, what it took to generate that wealth. So Cornelius's son actually doubled their wealth, but then he died, I think it was within 12 years of his father. And then that third generation that took over, they became famous for, you know, building the Breakers and all these other, you know, there were, you know, I don't know how many mansions, 20 mansions just in New York City or something that they built. So they become socialites and people that just, I mean, it must have been a party, right? It must have been great. Throwing cash around.
Yeah. Those couple of generations had a good time. Anderson Cooper is the son of a Vanderbilt, right? The CNN reporter.
And he pretends, they pretend that he didn't grow up in a world of privilege, but he did. Like, you can look up his biography, and he grew up very well. So his mom what was she? Was she an actress or something?
Yeah, I don't know. A socialite, something like that.
Socialite.
So they still have a college named after them, right there in, you know, not far from where you live. So they've got that remaining, but all that money's gone. So they didn't teach their generational offspring about money, wealth building, and wealth protection. And they didn't put anything in place that protects their wealth, which is the opposite of what the Rockefellers did. The Rockefellers used, trust. We're not going to talk estate planning necessarily because we're not experts in that. But, you know, they use trusts, foundations, and they fill those things. You know, most I would imagine are irrevocable. So you can't change them. They can't be, the beneficiaries can't destroy the money inside the trust because the trusts are managed by a trustee who makes the decisions and is liable for anything that goes wrong there. You know, and then the beneficiaries are the Rockefeller family, you know, the generations that have come and are yet to come. And they'll continue being beneficiaries because what do they utilize? They utilize permanent life insurance inside these trusts. So that's a pretty well-documented fact that the Rockefellers, I mean, you get a new Rockefeller born in the family, they get a whole life policy put into a irrevocable trust, perhaps, and that builds cash value and it builds death benefit. So there's this thing called, you hear it sometimes, like buy, borrow, die, where you can just borrow against that cash value and never pay it back. Because when you die, it gets paid back with that death benefit going back into the trust. So imagine that, if you could set that up for your family. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's no reason that we can't kind of exercise the Rockefeller method, but at our own level, wherever you're at. Yes, you're not, you know, you didn't inherit billions to start, but that doesn't mean you can't start something productive now that's going to benefit your children's children moving forward.
Right. So I think the biggest difference, and one of the foundational, this is the fact that foundational wealth principle that people really need to understand. Don't spend your own money. Stop. The worst thing you could possibly do is that money that you work, you sweat, you bleed for, that you sacrifice fun and nights and weekends for, don't spend it. You got to put that somewhere and create permanent wealth with it. And then either spend the money it makes, spend the money your money makes, or borrow against your own money. Right? And that's the difference. If Vanderbilt's liquidated everything, they just spent. I got a dollar in my pocket. I'm going to spend a dollar for a candy bar. Now I got a candy bar and no dollar. Well, that dollar has an opportunity cost. And that opportunity cost could go for generations if you set this up correctly. What could that dollar earn every single year for generations to come? That's it. If you can understand that, you, by the end of your lifetime, will be far ahead of where you otherwise would have been. And then your offspring are going to, I mean, it's crazy. They'll already have won before they even started the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Quick sidebar on, you know, we all kind of follow Dave Ramsey's little posts, and some of them are a couple of years old, but there was one the other day, and I was just reading the comments. Well, yeah, I get to see what,
I like to read
other people who have like the illusion of knowledge, right? That trick, you know, trick millions of people into thinking, oh yeah, this is the way. But anyway, one of the guys, and most of these people were just like, yep, I don't care about the next generation. They need to go out there and earn it. And that's fine. But my thought was, you have no idea what challenges this next generation is going to face. Acute inflation like this generation is facing. Most of these people are going to struggle to even own a home, right? You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if your grandchildren are going to be healthy. You might have one that's special needs. And that does happen, right? So I don't like those people. I don't think they're trying to just talk tough like, oh, I made it so they can go make it. And it's just like, all right, well, you're not my people. I don't want to work with you. Anyway, so that's just a sidebar. You should care. Care about something.
Yeah, I would agree. Of course, I mean, you can have whatever philosophy you want. Just because you leave money behind doesn't mean you have to give it to your kids all at once. Like, that's a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and that's the point, right? The Vanderbilts evidently didn't have any kind of constraints in place. Like, and that's why people use trusts, right? That's why the Rockefellers continue to use them, is that you can, you know, you hear the term control the money from the grave. And that's more or less what they're doing. Like, the money has to be used for something productive. That doesn't mean that business ventures don't fail, right, occasionally, but the ability to use the whole life insurance piece with the trust guarantees that the lost money on that one venture, let's say, does get replenished eventually when somebody that's part of this trust graduates to the next life when they die. So I think, you know, you present that to somebody like, hey, you don't have to just hand over millions of dollars. You can put constraints on it. And maybe you should, but that depends on your children and your children's children. How are they? Are they going to be good stewards? Or are they just going to go out and build mansions like the Biltmore and the Breakers and all these other places? You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Future's unknown.
Right. The future's unknown. So wouldn't it be nice to plan for that unknown future in case you need it? Maybe you don't. And the kids are going to be just fine on their own, but maybe they will. Or maybe your grandkids need help. Yeah. So we've got, you know, this is an interesting conversation you and I were having this morning, because we've got two clients, or actually one is about to become a client, and he understood this principle, which is why he wanted to get this going right away, right? Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so I'm working with this guy, and He is he's a pilot. He's a military pilot, but he's also a pilot for, I think, UPS. Very smart guy, does very well. But anyway, he's in the beginning of our process, he came to me and he's like, "Hey, Paul, we're going to sell the house that we're currently in. I want to buy a new house. Mama wants an upgrade and we need an upgrade. So I need this much liquidity by, let's say, the June timeframe." I'm like, "Okay, let's see what we're working with." He's got some existing policies that he wants to 1035. They're non-participating, so that's something that we usually do. They're fairly young. They've got some cash value, but not enough to really.
What does non-participating mean?
Yeah. So two different types of whole life insurance, right? There's non-participating, which is usually issued from a stock company. They generally don't pay dividends to policy owners. So for example, my previous whole life policies, and I used to own 10 of them, were non-participating, right? That means I purchased a certain amount of death benefit, let's say $250,000, which was my first whole life policy back in 2003. I bought a $250,000 policy. That death benefit does not grow. Consequently, the cash value grows very slowly, right? So that's what I mean. The other ones, obviously the types that we use for the infinite banking concept, those are dividend paying whole life insurance policies generally issued through, we only work with mutual life insurance companies. The mutuality means that we as policy owners also are part owners of that company, right? And that's what we want. We talk about ownership on this podcast a lot. Ownership is everything. Equity is everything. So that's how those policies work, and they grow with you. Every year, my policy grows. I pay the premium, the cash value increases, the death benefit increases year after year after year. So that's the difference between those two. So anyway, he's like, "Hey, I need this much liquidity in this new policy so I can go do the house. Maybe there's some rehab I got to do, whatever." So I'm like, "Dude, that's easy." He has existing cash waiting in the wings in a savings account, high yield. So we're going to take that money plus the money from his old policies, and we're going to do like what is called a lump sum of premium. It's paid-up additions premium. So it creates very, very early liquidity, like right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then we created an annual premium that he decided on that he's going to pay out-of-pocket every single year, year after year after year. And it's a blend between base premium and paid-up additions premium as well. So he's going to have more than enough liquidity in this first policy to go, you know, sell the house, sit on the cash, take a policy loan, do the down payment on the new house, and then he'll be on his way. Then he'll use his normal cash flows and repay that policy loan. But he's captured that money in his policy first. So he's got money working for him in more than one way. And it's just a great opportunity. But not everyone can see that because they don't understand the mechanics of how these whole life policies can work for them.
Yeah, and you're going to need to understand
somebody else, I think.
Yeah, you don't need to understand the mechanics of how the policy works for them. You need to understand the foundational principle that you should not spend your own money. You need to, because there's such an opportunity cost with paying cash. So this guy understands that, hey, if I take that $85,000, put it directly from my checking account, you know, my paycheck, I went and I flew and I worked really hard, and then it dropped that money into my paycheck, or my paycheck dropped that money in my checking account. Now I'm going to go take that money and just go throw it into a house, lock it up inside the walls of a house for however long I live there. Understand this foundational principle that you could actually have your money working in more than one place at a time. So he understands it, which is why he wanted to do infinite banking, which is why he reached out and said, "I need to get this put together right now because I've got this on the horizon. I want to run this capital through my system so I can earn on it for the rest of my life. And then I'll borrow against it, like the Rockefellers, and leverage it to go buy this house, put a down payment on a house." Right? I've got another client that I was talking to, and he's still trying to really cement this foundational principle in his mind. And he's battling with it right now. He's got the cash to put down on a house, call it $50,000. And yeah, you could put that down on a house, but it's, you know, you have so many more decisions that you could be making. How about we've got room in a policy for you to run that through your system right now, borrow against it, put it down on a house if you choose to. I'd recommend not putting it down on a house. Why would I want to throw $50,000 against a, you know, into a down payment that'll save me $250 to $300 a month in a payment. I'd much rather have $50,000 liquid or $50,000 put towards an opportunity. Right. But the first thing, the first move should always be, how can I get this capital into my own system? So it's compounding uninterrupted for the rest of my life. And then I can leverage it to use for what I was going to use it for anyway.
Yeah. And when we were talking earlier, you actually helped him work through some numbers and ran some numbers while you were talking to him. And I think you're, based on the price of the home and the interest rate, the difference in the monthly payment was only a few $100.
Yeah.
So he was going to sacrifice the use, right, of $50,000 of liquidity. Look, again, liquidity equals opportunity. It equals flexibility. We want control. That's what the infinite banking concept is all about. It's about controlling the banking function. I'm with you, Dave. I'll give up the $300 a month to keep $50,000 of liquidity. I'll do that every single day. I wouldn't do it a different way, in fact. So that's something, but again, step number one in the process, rethink your thinking. You have to start thinking about wealth and money and control. You just have to start thinking about it differently. And once you understand the problem, right? Most people's problems are they don't have any cash, right? Solution, infinite banking concept. Rethink your thinking.
Yeah, I was talking to another guy yesterday, makes really good money, you know, flies for a major airline, is in his prime earning years, but admitted that, hey, I write a lot of checks. He's like, I make really good money, but I write a lot of checks and I don't know where it goes, you know? And that's exactly it. It's like, we don't know where it goes. But you can still write those checks just as you're going to anyway. Just funnel that money through your own system first so you never lose the opportunity of earning on it. You know, we're talking about two different families. The Vanderbilts spent their fortune. The Rockefellers protected it. And in one way, by borrowing against it, not spending it, you leverage it. You protect it and leverage it. You know, one family went broke in two generations and the other one is still, who knows, one of the richest foundations, richest families in the world to this day. Yeah. And they run the world.
Well, it's certainly a well-known names.
Yeah. So it's really, you know, there's, everybody thinks they only have like two choices with their cash. Either I save it or I spend it. I mean, there's four things you can do with money, right? You can save, you can invest, you can give it away, or you can spend it, right? And people think you can only do one of those at a time. Well, it's not true because they haven't rethought their thinking, right? That's what the Vanderbilts thought. The Rockefellers, on the other hand, look, you can do all of those things with the same dollar. It just depends on the order in which you do it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Simple as that. Yeah, if you just change the sequence of where your money goes first, which we also talk a lot about on this podcast, you can really, I think you said this the other day, you can control both sides of the banking equation, right? You can be the borrower and you're the lender, kind of all wrapped into one process and one product. And that's exactly what they've done. And that's exactly what other wealthy people continue to do, whether it's Bezos, you know, or Musk, pick any of these people that, you know, a good part of their wealth is their own stock of their companies, right? They could walk into their bank of choice and get a line of credit against, you know, that particular chunk of stock. And the bankers will gladly do it every time.
Yeah. And what is stock of a company? It's ownership, it's equity. That's the exact same thing we have with our dividend paying cash value whole life insurance policies, is we have ownership and equity in the company. So we do the exact same thing, just on a much, much smaller scale than Bezos or Musk or anybody else, where we don't spend our own cash. I'm going to let that appreciate, let that compound uninterrupted over here, leverage it, take the money over here and go use it smartly. It also requires, though, that you use that money smartly. You could use it to go buy a bunch of liabilities that don't pay you back. And every once in a while, maybe you'll need to, like, you know, you got to buy a new washing machine because it broke, or you got to buy cars, right? Or Paul wants, you know, an eighth sports car. which means you got to go buy a new garage stall. So there's things that won't necessarily pay you back. You're not going to make money on them. You know, and they may appreciate over time, but that's not cash flow. That's not a good repayment strategy. So if you're using your money wisely and predominantly looking for ways to put that money to use in two places at once. So this is one of those things that most people don't understand, right? That I can only put my money in one place at a time. The fact is, your money is always working in two places at the same time, unless it's locked up in a vault at home. You just have cash sitting in your the vault in your walls. It's being used by more than just you. Banks are always using that money. Hedge funds, your 401k, if you have shares of a company that, you know, they go to the DTC, somebody is leveraging those shares. You don't actually hold them. Therefore, you don't really own right. them because you're not holding them. Somebody else is holding them for your benefit, and they're leveraging those to make more money that you don't ever get to see. So make no mistake, your money is always being used in two places at once. The fact is, most of you only know how to use your money in one place at the same time. You're not getting the benefits of those other places it's being used. So how is this method different?
Yeah,
what
so,
do we do?
Right. Well, exactly. Well, simple question. Would you rather have a dollar doing one thing at a time for you, or would you rather have it doing multiple things? I mean, it's a pretty stupid question, right? Obviously. Yeah. if I could learn how to make a dollar do more than one job for me, I would want that. I would want to know about that right away, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's exactly what this strategy is. This concept, the infinite banking concept, teaches you how to leverage your cash, put it to work in two places at the same time. You know, because in reality, your cash is not actually sitting there in a cash value account, right? I think we've explained this before, but it's helpful for anybody new
right.
listening. That cash value, it's not actually a stack of cash. And then the life insurance company has a separate pot of money. You can envision it like that, but that's not the way it works. It's actually just equity. Just like the equity in your home is not sitting in the bank's vault as a stack of cash. That you have $100,000 of equity. Oh, the bank has $100,000 in cash that you can access whenever you want. No, that money's out there working. That's just the amount that you own that you own, and therefore you can borrow against it if you want.
Yeah, and none of this would work really if they had to like just all right. This they do have reserves, but that's not what we're talking about here. When you take a policy loan or something, you're not necessarily getting money from reserves. You're likely getting it from incoming premium and incoming loan repayment, of which there's hundreds of thousands of dollars per day hitting life insurance companies, perhaps millions. So if the company's big enough. So anyway. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. So always find a way we always say the banking function is going on, whether you're involved in it or not. So how much do you want to be involved in it? Because somebody's leveraging your dollars in another way besides you just spending it. You're creating value upon value upon value every time you send a dollar out. But you're only getting the transactional value of that dollar. You're not getting anything on top of that unless you rethink your thinking and you start saying, how can I put my money somewhere, leverage against it, borrow against it? And now, in theory, you have it working in multiple places at the same time. I mean, that's really, it's not magic. It's just that's the way banking works. Do you want to be a part of it?
Yeah, exactly right. You know, I wanted to go back, Dave, real quick to the two clients we just talked about. One who understands it, he wants to flow the cash through a policy and then go do the new house purchase. The other one who's still trying to rethink his thinking and understand how it works. On a personal note, you and I were talking after this meeting and after the next meeting that we have together, I have another meeting scheduled with a mortgage lender that reached out on LinkedIn. That specializes in veterans affairs loans. And, it's the mindset is this. I've got some equity in this house, both because the house has increased in value, but also because I was required to put 25% down. think about this, folks. I want that money under my control. In the walls of this house, I can't do anything with it, right? It's idle. It's dead money, right? I'm going to be able to, hopefully, I'm going to take out as much equity as I can. And guess where I'm going to put it? I still own my house. I still have equity in it, but I'm going to take that equity and I'm just going to put it in a place where I can get to it so I can use it for other profitable opportunities or something that I don't even know about yet, right? There's an opportunity right around the corner that you might bring me or somebody else might bring me that I haven't even thought of, or I might have a need for something to finance. And I might, that pool might spring a big leak and I have to get it fixed. Well, I'm going to need some cash to do that. And as you always say, if you have enough cash to solve a problem, you don't have a problem. So again, folks, have your money work in more than one place at a time, and you will enrich yourself. You will feel so much more control and so much more wealthy because money you were locking up somewhere else by paying extra on that mortgage or you're stuffing it in a 401k somewhere, you'll have that money within your grasp by a simple phone call or logging in on your phone. Send me money. I need to do something. And you'll be the first to the deal every time.
But that's a great point because you mentioned it. It's control. You're taking that 200K of equity that's in the walls of your house, removing it from the bank's control, and putting it over into your control, putting it into your system. And that's really what this is. It's a system. You know, it's a banking system. You're not starting a bank, but it's a banking system. So that's exactly it. And if you can, especially if you can afford that monthly payment, of course, that's 200 grand. Now you have to get a loan on, essentially, right? You're mortgaging that 200 now. So your payment, your monthly payment will go up, but that's less of a concern to you because that difference, that maybe $1,000 a month of difference is less valuable.
That's about exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's less valuable than what that 200K of liquid capital can be doing for you over here. I mean, 12,000, that's a 6%, like, right? 12,000 on 200K, that's 6% annually. Can you do better than 6% with that 200K somewhere else? Can you earn more than that?
Of course.
That's what you'd be saving, essentially, but can you earn more than that? Absolutely, you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's just a mindset, and I just feel better the more liquidity that I have, right? You just, like we've talked about it before, when you make that final policy loan repayment, your policy loans, you have no policy loans out, your premiums are paid, and you're kind of just like, all right, on to the next thing. It really allows you to kind of refocus and recage, so you can focus on that next thing that's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, it's peace of mind, man. When you got that money in the bank, actually money in your own bank, that's peace of mind. And you're like, I can do whatever I want. What does the banker want to do today? So really, I mean, you know, one family asks, the Vanderbilts asks, how can I enjoy this? The Rockefeller said, how can we never lose this? There's a big difference there, right? How can I spend this versus how can I never lose this? One creates a lifestyle, the other creates a legacy. And guess what? Legacy creates a pretty nice lifestyle too, but you got to build that.
That's right. You know, supposedly Cornelius Vanderbilt said on his deathbed, like, keep the money in the family or whatever, keep it close.
Good advice, Dad.
To his credit, the son did. He literally doubled their wealth in like a decade or something. So he did great. It was just that third, I guess it would have been Cornelius's grandchildren that kind of, you know, crash that plane into the ocean fast. But yeah. I will say, having been to the Breakers, I haven't been to the Biltmore yet. It's beautiful. In Newport, Rhode Island, right on the wall. I mean, it's an impressive, if you haven't been, folks, go visit that. It's a National Historic Site. It's impressive.
Yeah. Never been. But I'll take you up on that next time I'm out on the East Coast. Which I'm not there very often.
Hey, we'll be in Boston. I don't know if I'll have enough time to drive down to Rhode Island, but
Yeah, probably not.
It's not that far.
But we'll see. We'll see you in Boston in July. All right. So let's just wrap this up. In summary, you know, you could be either the Vanderbilts, you could be the Rockefellers. I mean, maybe none of us will ever be as wealthy as them, but we could build something pretty significant for our family. So, you know, if you want to be the Vanderbilts and just spend what you make, enjoy your life, have fun, leave nothing to the following generations, be the Vanderbilts. That's your choice. We live in a free country, right? You're free to spend your money however you want, you know, what the government doesn't steal from you anyway. And why don't you take the Rockefeller side?
Yeah. You know, maybe whole life insurance isn't your thing. Maybe it's real, you know, a lot of real estate investors think they don't need whole life because their kids are going to inherit this big, they won't. The point is, though, to never interrupt the compounding of your money, right? Your 529 college savings, your 401k, those are things that you're going to take from to do one thing. You should learn how to use the Rockefeller method and use somebody else's money to do the things that you want to do. And I'm not talking about buying your groceries. I'm talking about financing things, financing your investments, financing education, maybe a second home, maybe a vacation home. But the point is, when we practice the infinite banking concept, when you practice the infinite banking concept, you're going to use the life insurance company's money to do the things that you were going to do anyway.
Yep. Right. All right. Well, so next week, we're going to talk about why whole life insurance is the worst investment in the world. And maybe some of you listening, maybe you shouldn't become your own banker. So we'll dive into that. So stay tuned. Hey, before we leave, get on the wealthwarehousepodcast.com. We've got a course on there. We've got a link to Nelson's book. We've got scheduling links. Schedule that free 30-minute strategy call with us. Let's have an intro call. You know, if you like what you hear, let us know. You can schedule with either one of us on that calendar. So we got pretty good availability between the two of us. I mean, Paul's retired. He can pretty much talk anytime.
Anytime.
I'm still working for a living.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing I would say is, you know, if you like what you hear, share this podcast with your friends and family. If you're already practicing the infinite banking concept, you know this is the way. Share that with somebody else who might have the open mind to kind of handle and catch this concept. And, you know, tell them that they can reach out to us, get on our calendar, and we'll take great care of them.
Yep. And until next week, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.